New York City, March 15th, 2014. 5. Addie leads Henry down the street and around the corner to a nondescript steel door plastered with old posters. A man loiters next to it, chain-smoking and scrolling through pictures on his phone. "Jupiter," she says, unprompted, and the man straightens and pushes open the door, exposing a narrow platform and a set of stairs that drops down out of sight.
"Welcome to the fourth rail."
Henry shoots her a wary look, but Addie grabs his hand and pulls him through. He twists, looking back as the door swings shut.
"There is no fourth rail," he says, and Addie flashes him a grin.
"Exactly." This is what she loves about a city like New York. It is so full of hidden chambers, infinite doors leading into infinite rooms, and if you have the time, you can find so many of them. Some she's found by accident, others in the course of this or that adventure. She keeps them tucked away, like slips of paper between the pages of her book. One stairwell leads to another, the second wider, made of stone. The ceiling arches overhead, plaster giving way to rock, and then tile, the tunnel lit only by a series of electric lanterns, but they're spaced far enough apart that they do little to actually break the dark. A breadcrumb trail, just enough to see by, which is why Addie has the pleasure of seeing Henry's expression when he realizes where they are. The New York City subway has nearly 500 active stations, but the number of abandoned tunnels remains a matter of contention. Some of them are open to the public, both monuments to the past and nods to the unfinished future. Some are little more than closed tracks tucked between functioning lines. And then, some are secrets.
"Addie," murmurs Henry, but she holds up a finger, tilts her head, listening.
The music starts as an echo, a distant thrum, as much a feeling as a sound. It rises with every downward step, seems to fill the air around them, first a hum and then a pulse, and then, at last, a beat. Ahead, the tunnel is bricked up, marked only by the white slash of an arrow to the left. Around the corner, the music grows. One more dead end, one more turn, and sound crashes over them. The whole tunnel vibrates with the force of the bass, the reverb of chords against stone. Spotlights pulse blue-white, a strobe reducing the hidden club to still frames, a writhing crowd, bodies bouncing to the beat, a pair of musicians wielding matching electric guitars on a concrete stage, a row of bartenders caught mid-pour. The tunnel walls are tiled gray and white, wide bands that wrap in arches overhead, bend down again like ribs, as if they are in the belly of some great forgotten beast, the rhythm pulsing through its heart. The fourth rail is primal, heady, the kind of place Luke would love. But this is hers. Addie found the tunnel on her own. She showed it to the musician turned manager looking for a venue. Later that night, she even suggested the name, their heads bent over a cocktail napkin. His pen marks, her idea. She's sure he woke up the next day with a hangover and the first stirrings of the fourth rail. 6 months later, she saw the guy standing outside the steel doors, saw the logo they'd designed, a more polished version, tucked beneath the peeling posters, and felt the now familiar thrill of whispering something into the world and watching it become real. Addie pulls Henry toward the makeshift bar. It's simple, the tunnel wall divided into three behind a wide slab of pale stone that serves as a pouring surface. The options are vodka, bourbon, or tequila, and a bartender stands waiting before each. Addie orders for them. Two vodkas. The transaction happens in silence. There is no point trying to shout over the wall of sound. A series of fingers held up, a 10 laid on the bar. The bartender, a slender black guy with silver dusting his eyes, pours two shots and spreads his hands like a dealer laying down cards. Henry lifts his glass, and Addie raises hers too, and their mouths move together,
She thinks he's saying cheers while she answers salut, but the sounds are swallowed up, the clink of their shots nothing but a small vibration through their fingers. The vodka hits her stomach like a match, heat blossoming behind her ribs. They set the empty glasses back on the bar, and Addie's already pulling Henry toward the crush of bodies by the stage when the guy behind the bar reaches out and catches Henry's wrist. The bartender smiles, produces a third shot glass, and pours again. He presses his hands to his chest in the universal gesture for, "It's on me." They drink. And there is the heat again, spreading from her chest to her limbs, and there is Henry's hand in hers, moving into the crowd. Addie looks back, sees the bartender staring after them, and there is a strange feeling, rising like the last dregs of a dream, and she wants to say something, but the music is a wall, and the vodka smooths the edges of her thoughts until it slips away, and then they are folding into the crowd. Up above, it may be early spring, but down here, it is late summer, humid and heavy. The music is liquid, the air thick as syrup as they plunge into the tangled limbs. The tunnel is bricked up behind the stage, making a world of reverb, a place where sound bends back, redoubles, every note carried, thinning, without trailing off entirely. The guitarists play a complicated riff in perfect unison, adding to the echo chamber effect, churning the waters of the crowd. And then the girl steps into the spotlight. A teenage sprite, a fey thing, Luke would say, in a black baby doll dress and combat boots. Her white blonde hair is piled on her head, done up in twin buns, the ends spiking like a crown. The only color is the slash of her red lips and the rainbow drawn like a mask across her eyes. The guitarists quicken, fingers flying over strings. The air shakes, the beat thumps through skin and muscle and bone, and the girl begins to sing. Her voice is a wail, a banshee's call if a banshee screamed in tune. The syllables bleed together, the consonants blur, and Addie finds herself leaning in, eager to hear the words, but they draw back, slip under the beat, fold into the feral energy of the fourth rail. The guitars play their hypnotic chorus. The girl singer seems almost like a puppet, pulled along by the strings. And Addie thinks that Luke would love her, wonders for an instant if he's been down here since she'd found it. She breathes in as if she'd be able to smell the darkness, like smoke on the air. But Addie wills herself to stop, empties her head of him, makes space instead for the boy beside her, bouncing in time with the beat. Henry, with his head tipped back, his glasses fogged gray, and sweat sliding down his cheeks like tears. For an instant, he looks impossibly, immeasurably sad, and she remembers the pain in his voice when he spoke of losing time. But then he looks at her, and smiles, and it's gone, a trick of the lights, and she wonders who and how and where he came from, knows it is all too good to be true, but in this moment, she is simply glad he's there. She closes her eyes, lets herself fall into the rhythm of the beat, and she is in Berlin, Mexico City, Madrid, and she is right here, right now, with him. They dance until their limbs ache, until sweat paints their skin and the air becomes too thick to breathe, until there's a lull in the beat and another silent conversation passed between them like a spark. Until he draws her back toward the bar and the tunnel, back the way they came. But the flow of traffic is a one-way street, the stairs and the steel door only lead in. Until she cocks her head the other way to a dark arch set in the tunnel wall near the stage, leads him up the narrow stairs, the music fading a little more with every upward step, ears buzzing with the white noise left in its wake, until they spill out into the cool March night, filling their lungs with fresh air. And the first clear sound Addie hears is his laughter. Henry turns toward her, eyes bright, cheeks flushed, intoxicated in a way that has less to do with the vodka than with the power of the fourth rail. He is still laughing when the storm starts. A crack of thunder, and seconds later, the rain comes down. Not a drizzle, not even the sparse warning drops that soon give way to a steady rain, but the sudden sheet fall of a downpour. The kind of rain that hits you like a wall, soaks you through in seconds. Addie gasps at the sudden shock of cold. They are 10 feet from the nearest awning, but neither of them runs for cover. She smiles up into the rain, lets the water kiss her skin. Henry looks at her, and Addie looks back, and then he spreads his arms as if to welcome the storm, his chest heaving. Water clings to his black lashes, slides down his face, rinsing the club from his clothes, and Addie realizes suddenly that, despite the moments of resemblance, Luke never once looked like this. Young, human, alive. She pulls Henry toward her, relishes the press of his body, warm against the cold. She runs her hand through his hair, and for the first time it stays back, exposing the sharp lines of his face, the hungry hollows of his jaw, his eyes, a brighter shade of green than she has seen them yet. Addie, he breathes, and the sound sends sparks across her skin, and when he kisses her, he tastes like salt and summer. But it feels too much like a punctuation mark, and she isn't ready for the night to end, so she kisses him back, deeper, turns the period into a question, into an answer. And then they are running, not for shelter, but the train. They stumble into his apartment, wet clothes clinging to their skin. They are a tangle of limbs in the hallway, unable to get close enough. She pulls the glasses from his face, tosses them onto a nearby chair, shrugs out of her coat, the leather sticking to her skin. And then they are kissing again, desperate, hungry, wild, as her fingers run over his ribs, hook in the front of his jeans. "Are you sure?" he asks. And in answer, she pulls his mouth to hers, guides his hands to the buttons of her shirt as hers find his belt. He presses her back against the wall and says her name, and it is lightning through her limbs. It is fire through her core. It is longing between her legs. And then they are on the bed, and for an instant, only an instant, she is somewhere else, some when else, the darkness folding itself around her, a name whispered against bare skin. But to him, she was Adeline, only Adeline, his Adeline. My Adeline. Here, now, she is finally Addie.
"Say it again," she pleads.
"Say what?" he murmurs.
"My name."
Henry smiles. "Addie," he whispers against her throat. "Addie." The kisses trail over her collar. "Addie." Her stomach. "Addie." Her hips. His mouth finds the heat between her legs, and her fingers tangle in those black curls, her back arching up with pleasure. Time shudders, slides out of focus. He retraces his steps, kisses her again, and then she is on top of him, pressing him down into the bed. They do not fit together perfectly. He was not made for her the way Luke was, but this is better, because he is real and kind and human, and he remembers. When it is over, she collapses, breathless, into the sheets beside him, sweat and rain chilling on her skin. Henry folds around her, pulls her back into the circle of his warmth, and she can feel his heart slowing through his ribs, a metronome easing back into its measure. The room goes quiet, marked only by the steady rain beyond the windows, the drowsy aftermath of passion, and soon she can feel him drifting down towards sleep. Addie looks up at the ceiling.
"Don't forget,"
she says softly, the words half prayer, half plea. Henry's arms tighten, a body surfacing from sleep.
"Forget what?"
he murmurs, already sinking again. And Addie waits for his breath to steady before she whispers the word to the dark.
"Me."